There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm going to start off and then you can finish.
Please do start.
Here she is. Curls and coils cascading down her face cannot contain the crispness of... And then you have to take over.
Okay, I will. And her elegant ways, her enchanting personality have earned her a place in the nation's heart. And now, on Joyride, we're privileged and delighted to welcome Vic Hope as our guest.
Oh, yes. Get curls and coils cascading written down. I might frame it. It's poetry. Well, it's beautiful.
And Vic, let's just go to the immediate your immediate history, because on your way here you had you were stuck in the Blackwall Tunnel.
Are you claustrophobic? No, I'm not. I mean, not in the Blackwall Tunnel. I feel like I'm very used to it, because I live in Dalston in Hackney, and you regularly have to take that route if you're going to the O2 or anywhere on this side of the river, and I'm used to being stuck in there. I'm sorry I was a little bit late.
Oh, don't worry about that at all. I was more concerned about your mental well-being. Was there a sort of a camaraderie in the Blackwall Tunnel? Were people sort of offering help to one another, sharing their thermoses and sandwiches and so forth?
This is London, Jules. A few times I looked into other people's windows and tried to catch their eye, but they ignored me.
Oh. What would you have done if you had caught their eye?
I guess a little wave, maybe like toss my cascading curls and coils.
Yeah.
Yes.
But that's what you could have avoided the Blackwall and got the Woolwich Ferry.
I
love getting on a ferry, and the Woolwich one's a great one.
I especially love when taking a boat is functional. Like, I love a boat ride. I love to bask in the sun on a catamaran in Ibiza, but when you actually have to get from A to B and a boat is your option, it makes me so excited.
I quite
ferries
agree.
Even though I get very, very, very seasick, I mean, I vomit every time, but I love it so much. I took a boat when I was quite young. We went to Ecuador, went to the Galapagos Islands, and I was so ill that I was sick so much that I perforated my eardrum from
being sick,
retching too much. Yeah. And the doctor on the boat had to come down and give me an injection in my bum, because I couldn't stay still enough to put it in my arm. And then I just slept for the rest of the 9 days.
So not probably best to avoid the Woolwich ferry then. Do you fear the ferryman?
You have to put an injection in my bum.
Yeah, exactly. Poor ferryman. I mean, I didn't realise that was part of his job.
Ferryman's an old term for the fellow who takes you to hell.
Yeah.
Well, it would be in your case if all these things were happening. But going back to your time basking on your catamaran in the Mediterranean, would we say substitute the word basking for a collapse, having just vomited after a journey sort of thing?
I discovered sturgeon, which is a motion sickness tablet that actually...
Oh, not the fish.
No, or Nicola, that changed the game. And it was on a trip to Ibiza, and someone said, here, this will...
That is very useful from a number of point of views, because there might be, if there's just one person listening to this podcast who has seasickness,
then
I feel as though this would have done its job. Secondly, if the managing director of Sturgeon Pills is listening and would like
like a free box.
Yes, exactly.
Well, when I was a kid, whenever I got into a car, I'd have to have Quells, which is, I suppose, a car version of Sturgeon's.
Because it quells the sickness.
Yeah, because I was always sick. If I sit in the back seat, I'd always have to get out and spew up until... So the cry would go out in our house, don't forget the quells.
I'm the same. It's the same with cars and planes. But, I mean, I sort of don't mind, because I like going places. I've only realised recently just how much I think travelling was a part of my identity. and my personality. And I don't think you really have to ever think about that normally, because we're allowed that spontaneity and that freedom. But I do. Yeah, I've always, ever since I was little, my mum and dad used to take us backpacking. Every Christmas we'd go away.
Where did you go?
All over. Sometimes to Nigeria, which is where half my family are. But often we'd then combine that with somewhere else in Africa, maybe Zimbabwe or Ghana or South Africa, Mozambique. And we started traveling a lot around Latin America, around Southeast Asia. And we would book a hotel room for one night when we arrived and then just take it from there. All six of us with little backpacks on.
Well, just say so, because a lot of the people we've had on this show, who are fantastic, by the way, great icons in their own field and everything. But if you talk to them about their child, not all of them, but some about their childhood holidays, it was an excitement if they went as far as sort of Dymchurch or something. But you're not only going to places in the world, in the African continent and the South American continent, which, let's face it, even just from an insect point of view, is quite a challenge for some people.
Yeah.
But also, not only that, you're not staying in a hotel. You're not in a hotel, then you're just off sort of walking around the wherever.
And in Africa, with a backpack, do you mean camping?
Sometimes camping.
And was that not terrifying? Was it like hyenas?
I remember, and my dad will hate me for saying this, I remember once we camped on the Serengeti in Tanzania. And
is that what is a Serengeti?
It's where the Maasai Mara, it's sort of between Kenya and Tanzania, there's a huge expanse, like savanna.
A great plain?
But great plain where the animals roam free.
And what sort of animals are roaming free? Just
all
give us
a picture.
All the
big five. We've got lions, we've got giraffes, my favourites, water buffalo, elephants, crocodiles, hippos.
I just want to get the picture of you there. And what age are you, by the way?
So I will have been about 11, maybe no, 10, 9, because Gabriel wasn't born yet. So Gabe was born when I was maybe 8 then.
So about 8-year-old child, there you are, all entering this. You had one night in a hotel, and then you've entered the Serengeti plain with all of the big five animals. Off you go. What's happening
and
then?
So we're in a 4x4, a Land Rover, driving around with our tent, and we pitched up one night. We had a driver. He said, "I'm just going to sleep in my car tonight." And we were like, "Oh, you're not sleeping in a tent like the rest of us." And he was like, "No, I think it's best if I'll sleep in the car." He then picked up his rifle and put it on his chest, crossed his arms over it, and went to sleep. It's funny that he's decided to sleep inside the Land Rover with a rifle on his chest. But hey, he said it's fine for us to camp here. We'll camp here. And we camped. And during the night, we woke up to the sound of these roars. And they were so guttural and so loud. And we looked around. And we turned on the light on the torch. And you could see the silhouette of a lion right outside our tent, just roaring. We could see it was the silhouette, just with his mouth sort of turned up to the sky. And mum and dad, for the first time in my life, I could see that they were quite frightened, because they never show it when you're little. They never show it. You don't see it. And they were like, "Okay, everyone, just stay very still." And it just continued, and we could hear there were lions all around. There wasn't just one.
They were after the smell.
I think that we were just in their habitat. We spoke to the driver in the morning, and he said, "Look, it's normal. This is just where they live.
Can we just go back? We're there. You come out. There's lions. Your parents probably weren't even sure what the right course of action was, but said, 'Be still,' because that's all they could think of doing. Frozen in fear themselves. And I'm just saying, this is what I would be in the, if I was them. I'd be in the same boat. And then, did nobody think of saying, somebody wake the driver up?
Well, he's in the car on the other side of the plot.
I'm not saying he could have used his gun, but maybe he could just have it handy in case, just in case, that's all. Obviously, the last thing you want to do is to shoot a lion. That's not what you want to do.
No.
He was last seen bubbling his foot down, hurtling towards Nairobi.
Oh, he's gone now. We just stayed very still, very quiet, and eventually they went away. But later in the night, my dad did need to go to the toilet, and during the day, we'd just been going in the bush, and my brother Theo at the time was still in nappies, so my dad just got one of his nappies and did it in that.
So there was a baby on this trip as well. It's quite adventurous, isn't it? And mind you, I tell you what, I have actually also been awoken in a tent by a lion.
No!
But this was at a campsite next to Whipsnade Zoo when I was a kid.
Right.
So they were quite contained there. Yes. It's a very different scenario.
Going back to this guide, because I think, looking back, he sounds like the most irresponsible, incompetent man. That one, to be entrusted with your safety in the close proximity of the big five creatures, but secondly, to have him asleep with a gun over his chest. I mean, is he the right man to be handling firearms?
Well, I'm still here, aren't I?
Yeah, I suppose so.
We all survived
it. What about South America? What happened there?
Well, so we travelled around Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Ecuador.
In the same way, but you got one night in the hotel, then you just go off with
a lot of backpacking. And it really ignited my love of Latin America. I remember being on a beach in Nicaragua and this guy called Pedro. To be honest, I was about 13, so this probably isn't right, but this guy called Pedro kept bringing me stones from the sea.
And what sort of age was he?
I mean, I reckon probably like 18 or something. And I fell in love and I couldn't talk to him because I didn't speak any Spanish at the time. And that was the moment that I made my resolve that I was going to learn Spanish. This was going to be my thing. And from there, I did. I campaigned at my school to get Spanish as a subject, which eventually did happen, but not until after I left. So I went to night classes, learned Spanish, got my A-level in it.
Is it all with Pedro at the back of your mind?
At the back of my mind. I went to uni to study French and Spanish.
Pedro's still there.
I've not seen Pedro since,
no.
But
you
I do speak Spanish now.
You didn't go back and find him.
Yeah.
And you'd gone off him. Like Candide by Voltaire.
Yeah.
He went back. The girl of his dreams searched all around the world, and when he found it, he'd gone off her.
Well, I reckon Pedro's still out there, just giving stones to other girls, probably.
Maybe that's the way he communicates.
Yeah,
with
maybe.
Stones.
Yeah, but it became my passion. Like, I studied at uni and then went to live in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, for a year to write for a newspaper out there. And
you really have a great. You have incredibly well travelled. I think because this podcast is vaguely about travel and transport, but we've never had actually anybody who's been anywhere like you have.
Oh,
so so going Argentina,
yeah.
Going back by the way to Pedro, and it's be impertinent to me to give you advice, but to my daughters, I always say if there's a chap comes and gives you stones, be very careful.
I feel like there's probably a mantra in there, isn't it? When a man gives you stones,
just watch it.
Watch it.
Know, he's obviously a bit of a weirdo and skinned.
Well, if a man gives you stones. That is one thing. If a man kept giving you flowers, I think that's creepier.
Do you think that's worse?
Yeah. I'd rather have the stones.
Yeah. What are you going to do with the stones?
Build a house for us both to live in.
What sort of stones?
Me and the man on the beach.
You and Pedro.
Me and Pedro on the beach in the house.
In your stone-built villa.
Yeah, and then I say to Pedro, bring more stones.
I wish to build a pavilion in the garden. Yeah. More stones, Pedro.
And while you're at it, get some fish out of the sea and cook that.
But Gil, you went to then Argentina.
Yes, when I was 19, I went to work for the Argentina Independent. I went to write for them. I covered Latin American politics and current affairs.
Wow.
I was doing my languages degree at uni and I was sort of specialising in Argentine culture, history, politics and literature, you know, in a roundabout way. I was sort of curating it for that because I was just fascinated by that part of the world. I knew that, you know, when a place just comes alive to you. And I really enjoyed the few times that I'd travelled, that I'd been to Cuba and stuff. I really enjoyed that I didn't get asked where I was from quite a lot. Whereas when I travel, usually I get asked where I'm from. It's normal. When I come back to Nigeria and we're still sort of different. And it was the first time in my life that I didn't really get asked that. I sort of could fit in a little bit. And there's such a thrilling liberty that you get from that. It's an amazing feeling. And especially then when you speak Spanish, I was just like, I really like how this feels. So I went there and I had this interest and I learned a lot. I worked a lot alongside the writing job. I worked for a human rights film festival as a translator. I worked in a cocktail bar. I had a job as, it was technically PR, but my job was essentially for a taco company. I had to go around giving out nachos around Buenos Aires wearing a sombrero followed by a mariachi band.
Nice.
I worked as a virtual dating assistant as well while I was there. So I did
people's, Argentina?
Yeah, I did people's online dating for them. Just all sorts. I spent a year there just doing all sorts. I loved
fantastic.
It.
Fantastic. I went to Buenos Aires. I really liked it. We played there and I really liked it. What's the bit round there where the big football club is?
San Telmo.
It's very French, isn't it?
La Boca.
Yeah. Well, French, Italian.
And German. A lot of
and
German.
A lot of European influences. And yes.
Nazi war criminals.
A lot of Nazi war criminals.
Was it now, when you were there, was there any rumours?
Not rumours so much, but if you go to, you know, the market in San Telmo, just right by where La Boca is, there's a lot of Nazi memorabilia on a lot of the stalls, I noticed. And when you try and take photos of it, they stop you.
Really?
Yeah, I did notice that.
But I think the thing I noticed about Argentina, Buenos Aires, I really liked, it reminded me of somehow it was a bit like Deptford, but sort of 50 years ago.
You're so right.
But
yeah.
It had. But I really, and I love that music, and I love the fact that when they played the music, it wasn't like, oh, here's our old sort of music that we're putting on for the tourists. It was, this is what they just play.
Yeah.
It was so kind of fantastic, Carlos Gardel, all that. It's like, yeah. Wow, it's really, I thought it was lovely. I really felt very... at home there, because it's partly, you feel sort of reassured, like, because it looks sort of European,
yeah,
but actually it's not, it's really kind of not European at all, is it?
They call themselves the Paris of the South. They're very proud of their European influence. They use words like ciao, bella, there's a lot of pizza and pasta, so there is that, and it's not necessarily a great thing on all levels, because they're not hugely welcoming to a lot of the indigenous communities who've come from the countryside, and who, for whom this is really their home. So there are issues there, but you're right in terms of, it is so beautiful, and music is the lifeblood of that place. It is literally pumping through the streets. Music and dance as well. Everyone can dance. Everyone can tango. You go to tango clubs, you go to milongas, which is where it's like a social dance, so everyone just gets up, and it was always like quite old men who would like come and ask me to dance. And I loved it. I just loved, like, I love that that was just part of your everyday.
And when we played there, so the whole orchestra went out. We arrived very early in the morning, and at the airport, we'd come in from somewhere. We'd been in Australia or somewhere before. So we'd flown from there. So with the whole big band, how all that works, I don't know. My manager went in and got some money at the airport. And then later on, he tried to buy something. They said, no, your money's counterfeit. He said, it can't be. I just got it at the airport.
Oh, yes, yes, said, yeah. You have to learn the hard way. Yeah. Lucky I was there
but
for
the
a
airport,
year.
But at the airport, you think you get... Yeah. Anyway, there we were.
Trust no one. I mean, there's already... Because there's the Argentine peso and then the dollar, and it depends where you go and what you can use. And there is a real distrust of banks because they had their crash not that long ago and the peso is pegged to the dollar. So the whole middle class almost got sort of eradicated by the fact that they all just lost all their money. So normal day-to-day people that you meet keep their money under their bed. There's a real distrust of anyone who might be in control of your money because they just think, well, what are they going to do with it? Even in restaurants, every menu is sort of wiped clean, so they change the prices every single day because inflation is wild, it's up and down. Mm. But yeah, it's like a fascinating place, and a place where democracy is still very young, so it's not so party-centric. It's more that they get really into a personality, which, as a journalist, was a really interesting thing to cover.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I remember one night having a night out in Buenos Aires, and because you've got the tango, but then you have like electronic tango, which is sort of this evolution of it, like dead cool. And we would go out until maybe 5, 6, 7 in the morning. And me and my friend, we were like, should we just go to Brazil? Here it's carnival. It was in February. So we got on a bus from Buenos Aires and bus depot, and then drove 30 hours to Florianopolis in Brazil one night, just arrived for carnival. Had a lovely time.
Fantastic.
So on a whim.
On a whim. They've also, didn't feel so great 30 hours in.
No.
They've also got those wonderful cemeteries, haven't they? Where Eva Perón is buried.
Recoleta.
What's it called?
Recoleta.
Recoleta, which is like a necropolis. Mm. And I went and had a look at that because I thought, oh, goodness. And I thought it was so lovely, these little pavilions where the dead are buried. But I thought, well, I'd really like to live here.
They're like tombs that are beautiful.
I'd like to have a little house in one of these. And you get lost in this necropolis. It goes on. It has a very unreal atmosphere. atmosphere, doesn't it? Really strange place.
It's weird as well there, because I think it's the stone that a lot of those tombs are sort of hewn from. The way the light hits it, it yes. looks like the whole cemetery sparkling. Yeah. It's so beautiful. And I remember me and my friends, it was like our hangover day thing to do on a Sunday. We'd just go for a walk around the cemetery, which when you think about it, it's a really weird way to spend your Sunday with your mates when you're 19. But we did, because it was such a gorgeous place.
Such a pretty place, yeah. It's a strange atmosphere. Well, obviously, there we are. So going back to your travelling, already, before you've hardly lived your life and you've been living in Argentina, you've been traipsed through the South America, got on buses, gone for like 3 days to get to Brazil from one place to another.
What's left?
Yes, what's left? Where would you like to go now?
Well, before everything stopped, there was two places I was going to go. I was going to go to...
Scarborough?
I was going to go to Lesbos and the Greek islands, yes. where there are... So a charity that I work with called Help Refugees, we're doing a lot of work there in the camps. And I was going to go and spend some time, but unfortunately was unable to because it became very dangerous and travel was sort of written off. And that hasn't really changed as yet, but I'm hoping that when we can move around a bit again, then I will go and help out for a bit.
On the Greek island?
Yeah, in the refugee camps.
I visited one in Leros.
Did you?
It's quite a strange place, Leros. It's a magical place, really. Yeah. But I like those Greek islands.
I went to one, Sifnos, which is a really
I don't think I've ever heard of Sifnos.
Not many people have been there. But
Is it of your creation?
No, I went there when I was, I don't know, what was it, 20, I think. And Because I grew up on Ray Harryhausen films, like
Jason
Sinbad.
And yeah.
It's Jason and the Argonauts, Sinbad.
Oh, yes.
And the Golden Voyager, Sinbad. So when I was there on a ferry going to it, I was thinking, this is Sinbad territory.
Yeah.
And any moment now, I'm going to see Cyclops rise out of the sea.
Yes, exactly. You're waiting for a mythological creature.
Yeah.
The Kraken, I believe, isn't he? The giant one that
the
lurks.
Kraken would rise out of
yes,
the sea.
Yes, and just one, he sleeps for 300 years, and then he'd just smell me, and there'd be a little twitch of his nostril,
yeah.
sort of many fathoms below, and then he'd sort of lunge to the top.
And then drag
and,
you down.
Yeah, I'd make my excuses, and he'd move on,
well, I loved it there. And that was the last time I went. There was Minotaurs wandering about on the
oh,
beach.
Oh, yeah, I love when he's seen Minotaurs.
Casually wandering about.
Yes. We were talking earlier, actually, about what's that? The Neanderthal? No, I can't even say it.
It's Neanderthal.
The new one, the giant.
What, they've discovered another...
Well, another sort of species.
Oh, there's... Devonian.
I can't quite remember. And, I mean, I think a lot of people do tune into this podcast to get completely half-cut, misinformed views and information. But there has been, I think the thrust of it is, there's a very early species of human that had not been discovered.
Right.
And the point about them is that these early humans were giants and quite sort of like troll-looking, like, you know. And I wonder if that's where the original sort of idea of trolls and everything came from, you know.
Will be, yeah, because we've all got a touch of the old Cro-Magnon. You know, Cro-Magnon. We have got, you know, that you've all got a little bit, because the Neanderthals and the Homo sapiens were meeting romantically now and then. And there's a little bit of Neanderthal in everyone,
you know, in
virtually.
Well, I suppose that...
Some have more than others.
Thank you. But anyway, I was just...
So
wondering.
You think that's where trolls... Yeah.
Or, yeah, because you get a lot of early stories of giants, which are then dismissed by people later on. But I think perhaps there were giants wandering around, you know.
I think they probably were.
But on your travels, you've never seen one.
My brother's a 6'7", so...
Is he?
But two of them are, yeah.
They weren't that size when the lions met this year.
One of them wasn't even born then.
So, 6'7".
So maybe they've got a bit Neanderthal in them.
And when he wears a hat, that's 7 foot.
Well, yeah. Well, they've both got big afros at the moment as well.
Really?
Probably more,
so,
yeah.
So on top of the afro, you could be talking 9 foot.
Well, if you put a hat on top of the afro...
A very tall hat, and you were wearing platforms. You're getting on for 10 foot.
Yeah, my brothers are 10 foot in their hats and heels.
Yes, exactly, yeah. What sort of width?
So when you were... All of you kids, big kids as well, and you'd go around in a van or a bus.
I'm the smallest, but I'm quite tall for a girl. But yeah, they all grew quite fast. I remember our final big family holiday before we started to, you know, make our own way to wherever it is that we're meeting, was we went around the States. We flew into LA and drove up the West Coast, up to San Francisco, Yosemite, Sequoia, then across to Vegas, and flew across to Chicago, and a bit of time in New York, Cincinnati. And we were at a point where we did not fit in that van. We did not fit, and it was not comfortable. I mean, it was a lot of fun. It was an amazing thing, and I'm very grateful to my parents for that. But my brothers were big at that point.
But you didn't then, when you were in America, when you were in the van, you didn't go off backpacking?
No, we stayed in motels. Lots of motels, some nicer than others. I don't know if you've driven across the States, but it's vast. There were a couple of places. I remember one place we rolled in, because we would just look each night. We're like, we'll stay there wherever we sort of stop. There's one place we rolled in. It was the dodgiest looking little town in the middle of nowhere. And a guy climbed out of essentially a bin, a skip. And he went, guys, I don't think you should stay here. Dad went, it's fine, it's fine. Well, it's fine. Don't listen to him.
This
we'll stay here.
This is the same dad who said, like, never mind about the lines.
Yeah. Well, he pissed in a nappy. Yeah. So, yeah. But we saw a lot of things.
But what then happened in that motel? Was it perfectly fine?
We've all survived it. Mm. It had some flickering lights and there didn't seem to be anyone else there, but it was fine.
Well, that's real America.
That's America.
That's what you want, isn't it?
I would have stayed
America,
there.
Yeah. It's so vast. It was so mind-boggling, because I've worked quite a few times in the States, and often you're in LA or New York, but there was a couple of shows that I did for Red Bull where we went to Louisville, Kentucky, and parts of it are absolutely amazing. I mean, the home of finger looking good KFC, but then we'd move a little bit further out, there were a lot of, you'd watch the news, there were a lot of shooting, it felt incredibly segregated, and I was like, I feel like I could be, you wouldn't believe that this is America, seeing it. And it is a fascinating place insofar as each of those states, they're almost autonomous and they're so, so different. And yeah, you feel like you've walked into the past quite a lot. I mean, I really enjoyed seeing so many different sides of it. As you say, a place of such great contrast.
But not a place, I suppose, that you would have like the other places where you then got your backpacks and you could just sort of go, you know, it's like I like that being like almost like a commando unit. You're dropped into the place, night in a hotel, then we're out with our...
Yeah, that's just how we travelled. I think it's a little bit heartbreaking, actually. I think for my parents, because that's how they loved us to see the world. They saw that as a part of our education. Our school were never that happy when we'd get taken out for several weeks at a time.
The best education you could have had,
but it was
surely
an education. And I think in recent years, my mum and dad have been like, oh, we'll just get, you know, a hostel for one night and take it from there. And they've realised it's not that easy anymore, because everyone's got an app with an Airbnb or Booking.com or Uber or whatever it is. So it's so accessible. And that's a good thing in so many ways. But it means that a lot of that spontaneity has been rubbed away. And you know, they haven't necessarily got the grasp of the apps and the online booking systems. And I think it's a bit heartbreaking because they loved seeing the world that way. But yeah, well, that's how we travelled. And sometimes there wouldn't be any hotels. I remember one night, this was Nicaragua, we'd arrived in Grenada from Managua, and we thought, oh, we'll just find a hotel. But it was New Year's Eve and everything was booked. And there just happened to be a lady outside one of the hotels where we were like begging, do you have a room? And she was like, come and stay with me. And she opened her home to us. And we just stayed in this woman's family home and celebrated New Year with her family.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you stayed in touch since?
No. Oh. We stayed one night and then we were off.
And they cleared up.
And that was it. But it was really nice. And we were salsa dancing till like 3 a.m. She was like, her family, she had sons. We were all just, salsa dancing.
Oh,
drinking lots
that's
of rum.
That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lovely.
Gives you some faith in humanity.
It does,
yes,
doesn't it?
Exactly.
And here, a message from our sponsors. Jules, my curtains are so dismal, they make me want to be sick. Their patterns fill me with disgust. Mm. The trim and pelmet appalls me. So awful, I'm going to hang myself.
No, there's no need. We have fitters who can do that for you. At It's Curtains For You in Eltham.
Also another branch in Bexley High Street, above the Undertakers.
Put yourself together. We're talking about all the extraordinary global places that you've been. What about places in either in the United Kingdom or in Europe? Did they take you? Did you get to visit all those places as well?
So it used to be Christmas times that we'd go away, because my mum cannot take the cold. She's Nigerian and she's just like, we usually would go back to Nigeria anyway and see our family. But so that was Christmas time, was away. But in the summertime, mum's like, well, it might be hot. so we should stay here. And we would always go to Scotland. So we would go up to...
Where it was very likely to be cold.
Yeah, which it was. It was. Rain. But we'd pack up the car and we'd camp. We'd go to the Isle of Skye, to Arran, and that was our thing. We had this six-man tent that we all stayed in. Never once stayed on a campsite. Dad would have us driving around for hours and hours into forests and by lochs, just trying to find somewhere we can pitch up a tent where we won't get run off the land by farmers. And that was our summers. Mum, who is amazing, used to always manage to whip up these incredible meals on a tiny little camp stove. She would make us jollof rice, like proper Nigerian food, even though we were camping in the middle of Scotland. And yeah, we'd get eaten alive by midges. It would usually be raining and cold, but it was that was our summers.
Yeah, how lovely. What a lovely sort of landscape to be in for the summer. A great contrast. And what about the sort of cities? Do you like going around cities and having a look at those?
I do. When we were younger, we used to go places, because I'm from Newcastle, so places we'd go to quite frequently, because we could get to Edinburgh, York, Leeds. Me and my mum used to travel to Leeds. That was our treat away from the boys every couple of... Because there was no Afro hairdressers in Newcastle when we were growing up. Well, there was one, but he was very, very expensive. So for us to get our hair done, we had to go to where there were more black people. So we'd go down to Leeds, and Margaret had a salon there. And we would have a day out. We'd get the train. And by the time I was allowed to have a little bit of Prosecco, we'd have like a little Prosecco on the train, pull into Leeds, go and see Margaret, get our curly perms or relaxers done to our hair, and then have a day of like, there was a place, where was it, where you could have some tea. I think it was at Harvey Nicks. They had like a fancy tea hall.
On the top floor.
Yeah, on the top floor. We'd go there. We'd have a cup of tea. We'd look at all the clothes, but never buy any. Mum would, it would always be like a lip balm. She said, a treat for you, we'd get you a lip balm. And that was our day. That was our girls' time in Leeds. And it's held a really special place in my heart. Whenever anyone says Leeds, I'm like, oh, Leeds. And other people don't necessarily think of it like that. But I look back on it with these really rose-tinted spectacles.
My mum and dad actually met right outside Harvey Nichols. There's a shop. I think it's Debenhams now, but it was something else then. And my mum was a window dresser in there. And my dad worked at the Yorkshire Post. And used to have a look at it doing the window dressing in the window there.
He would literally be window shopping.
Yeah, and they communicated, much like you and Pedro with stones, they communicated through the window with sign language. And he said, let's go to the dance hall round the corner next weekend. So they did that. And I think they got engaged 2 weeks later and married after 6 weeks of the first initial contact behind the window.
That's a beautiful story.
Amazing.
There we are.
And there you are. That's quite extraordinary. So that could have been you and Pedro.
It could have been.
I mean, that's the other thing. I always remember the first time I think I got taken abroad. My father he managed to get some work in Paris and he took us all. And I had long, lank, sort of black hair and imagined I was, I don't know quite where I thought I was, but anyway. And then I was walking along the road with him near where his office was in the West End and in Soho. And he suddenly pushed me into this barber shop and said, "We'll just get your hair cut." I said, "Oh, yeah, well," I wasn't really thinking of it. And within moments, I'd had sort of froth and stuff put on my hair. I wasn't really aware what was going on. And suddenly I reappeared and had been reinvented and I had this huge... enormous sort of mullet, which wasn't me at all. And we then went to Paris, and I must have been about 14 or 12 or something, I don't know, something like this, 13 maybe. And we go around museums. And I remember sort of catching the eye of this very beautiful girl of the same age as me, roughly speaking. And looking at her and trying and smiling. I don't know, just thought, you know, because you're, and I thought, oh, I bet she's a Parisian young woman, how great. And then I realised she was looking at me, and I thought, oh, she's not really paying attention to me because she thinks, who's that idiot with the mullet? And the mullet almost marred the whole Parisian experience for me.
I can't believe you got a mullet without asking or
without
planning.
Consent.
Without consent.
In those days, it was the same period when if you felt your husband or wife was slightly deranged, you just have them committed without, you wouldn't have to have any experts check them or anything.
Yeah.
It was the same days when you would just say, my uncle's not feeling very well, and they give him an injection. That was the end of it.
Yeah.
No forms to fill in.
Sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
so you could
be given a mullet against your will, just like that. It was horrible.
Perpetrated on me, and I'm saying perpetrated because that's what it was. I had the similar long, lank hair down to my waist, and I went into a hairdresser with a picture of Elvis Costello. And this was in 1978.
Right.
So Elvis Costello.
Crucially,
just
didn't have a mullet.
I said, "Can you do me hair like that?"
Yeah.
He went, "No way." He said, "I'm not doing that." that punk rocker. I'm not doing. I said, well, it's not really a punk rocker, but I want it like that. He went, nah. He said, I'll get somewhere near. And I came out and he'd done it and he'd blow dried it. So I looked like it was a 1970s version of Noel Edmonds. So it was very high centre parting,
yes,
blow dried into the shape of a bell around the side.
So almost like a jack of hearts, on the cards, a jack sort of.
Yeah, it was the most awful. So I looked out of the barber's and sort of waited until the bus arrived, made sure there was no one in there who recognised me. And I ran on the bus with my hands on my head, went home and then just got scissors out and got home and did it myself.
Did you make it better?
Miles better. But he refused to do what was, I would say, it was a very normal haircut.
Yeah.
And instead, he gave me, I had a bell on me, a Big Ben on my head.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people can just do one style, can't they? You know, that's what happens. You know, they can only do one thing, really. I think.
You're going to look like a BG, whatever.
Whether you like it or not, chum. Well, it's been wonderful chatting to you today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I tell you what, you've taken us on some journeys there that were both enlightening and terrifying and fun all at the same time. And I think tonight I will be dreaming about waking to the sound of those roaring lions.
Just keep a nappy close.
Yes.
Well, there goes Vic, travelling home, probably camping somewhere dangerous en route.
That's right. In a lay-by, perhaps, around the North Circular Road, unafraid of the foxes or whatever come close.
Not in the slightest bit. Perhaps just for a bit of comfort, she parks a tent up in a safari park on the outskirts of London. For safety.
This podcast was produced and edited by Molly Stewart.
Sound engineers were James Stewart and George Latham.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.